We today, in this Life's Great Truths message, are talking about, you know, famous people and being popular. There's probably no more famous person, at least in the news this week, than Harrison Ford. Did you guys hear what happened to Harrison Ford this weekend? Let's just say, Harrison Ford is the man, okay? He's flying not just a plane, but like some old fighter plane. He takes off. The dude's in his 70s. The plane basically completely malfunctions. He crash lands this thing on a golf course, and the first headlines out is that he's in critical condition, and basically Harrison Ford's dead. Like a day later, Harrison Ford goes, eh, no big deal. I knew Harrison Ford would be fine because that dude flies the Millennium Falcon. So the plane could keep that guy down. We want to start off with a little game this morning called Who Are They? Now, in the past, we do games like this, and I give you like a name, who are they, and then I give you multiple choice. Because, you know, I want to give you an out, I guess. You know, give you at least four options. Today, no options. I'm going to put a name, you're going to either know who this person is or isn't. But I promise you this, every person on the list is totally and completely, utterly famous. Top of their game in national and world arenas. Not like, you know, like, you know, the best third grader in someone's class. I mean, like, for like nationally world renowned, okay? So, to do this, we're going to have two volunteers that are going to go head to head in this competition. And the winner will receive a platinum super saver. This is a free pass to any Century Theater for any movie. Prime time doesn't matter. I mean, you can give it to your kid and waste it that way, but it's like full ticket value, okay? So I would encourage you not to do that. I need two volunteers, though. All right, right here. One more. Come on. Don't be shy. All right, in the back. Come on up. All right, yeah, come all the way up. Okay, so each of you get a whiteboard. Okay, well, then you have to have the black marker because we won't be able to read your writing. I had them laid out for a reason, you know. All right, now, I'm going to show you the name, and then you're going to write down. We need to do it kind of quickly here. You got to, you know, don't think too long. You just bet your best shot. You're either going to know the person or not, okay? So, our first person is, who is Millard Fillmore? Don't shout it out if you know, okay? People will know who Millard, obviously, will know who, obviously. Well, after I give you the answer, I'll give you the picture. Millard Fillmore. Anyone out here, don't say it, anyone out here know who Millard Fillmore is? Okay? All right. Millard Fillmore, okay, what do you guys got? IDK, you know, you could have at least guessed that you could have been right. There's like billions of people in the world. It'd be one out of billions. That's like the lottery. What do you got here?
Owns a theater.
Millard Fillmore owns a theater. Oh, Fillmore. Okay. That's a guess. Both crappy guesses. Who is Millard Fillmore? President of the United States. Now, it's been a couple years, 1850 to 1853, but my goodness, I mean, shouldn't we know? I mean, no offense to you guys. It's the president, right? It doesn't get more popular or famous than that here in America. All right, next one. Who is Ashton Carter? Reveal your answers. Oh, wait. Ooh, it's coming to her. Owns a drug company. Ashton Carter, okay.
Nick's
brother. It's Kuchar. Who knows who Ashton Carter is? Anybody? Not one person sitting here knows who Ashton Carter is. Wait, we got one? Our Secretary of Defense for the United States. Defense. President's cabinet. Yes. You don't believe me? That's what the dude looks like. All right? What? You know who? Movie stars? No, you're not going to see Paris Hilton up here, that's for sure. Who is Anthony M. Kennedy? And I put the M in so you didn't confuse it with other Anthony Kennedys. Anthony M. Kennedy. Anyone out here? No? Don't say it out. Anybody know? Anthony M. Kennedy? Couple of you? Yeah, I know you would. You got it? Reveal. What do you got? You got one of the Kennedys is a famous person. The Massachusetts senator. Correct answer is, let's ask our attorney in the house. Answer is? Supreme Court Justice for the last 27 years. Not a new dude on the bench. That is him. Look, someone's got to win this movie thing. Otherwise, I'm going to the movies, all right? All right, here we go. Who is John Hume? John Hume. The first ones I gave you were the easy ones. This one's a little tougher. John Hume. You got an answer? You
can no,
what do you got? Just senator. It's like John. Anybody know who it is, John Hume? Nobody's got this one? He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1998 for his work in Northern Ireland of creating peace. It was like a huge deal. If you followed anything with Northern Ireland and the violence that happens there, this dude was like in the trenches with this thing, did phenomenal work. I mean, if anybody ever earned the Nobel Peace Prize, it's this guy. And we don't know who he is. Paul Tibbetts. Paul Tibbetts. Want to phone a friend? We will in a moment. Three, two, one. I'm here because my wife made me help. All right. Paul Tibbetts, anyone? What? What's that?
He flew the Enola Gay, dropped the bomb.
He flew the Enola Gay, which dropped the... He was the pilot that dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima in, what was that, 46, I think. 45. Somewhere like that. Yeah. Very good. Last one. Who is Eddie Redmayne? Who is Eddie Redmayne? Who is Red? Eddie Redmayne. Okay, take a look at the audience for a minute. Okay, take a look. Who here knows who Eddie Redmayne is? Raise your hand. No, raise it high if you know. Okay, look at the age bracket. Got an answer? Eddie Redmayne is... He just received an Oscar for Best Actor.
Can I watch that movie?
Best Actor. Let's give them a hand. I do have this card, and since neither of you answered, you're both losers and you don't get it. Because in the look, in the real world, there are winners and losers. That's how life is. They were both losers. They don't get anything. All right. That is how it goes. Look, we all want to be someone. We want to be recognized. We want someone to notice us. We want to be important. That being said, I found a little clip from a movie. In fact, if you've seen this movie, you're a naughty person. You shouldn't have watched the movie, but it's called Anchorman. Okay? Take a look at this clip.
Do you know who I am?
No, I can't say that I do.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Really?
People know me.
Well, I'm very happy for you.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Sometimes we just want to be important. Look, we live in a culture that is truly preoccupied with fame and popularity and notoriety and recognition. Psychologists say that each one of us, whether you believe this or not, want desperately to be special. And not only do we want to be special, but we want that specialness to be recognized by others. That each of us has this desire. And so some of us, maybe in more outlandish ways, try to get people to see our specialness or try to be special. But I mean, we all believe what our mommies told us, that we were special. And though it's true that each of us are special, I don't want to undo necessarily what your moms told you, but I want you to know that especially to God, He created us special. In fact, God created you for, that's, I think, life, right? Filling in that blank. God created you for, it might be different for each one. I mean, but that's really like what life is about, trying to figure out, why in the world did God put me here? Literally, why did He put me here? What's this task or role or purpose that He has for me? But our unquenching desire to be special and be recognized as special is hurting our ability to see and become all that God created us for when He created us especially for that task. The truth is that our human need for fame and popularity is really a fleeting thing, just like the people on our list today. I mean, these people are top of their game. I mean, if you're a judge, I mean, the highest you can get is the Supreme Court. That is a big deal. Like, you're nominated by the president or, you know, the House. And I mean, you know, you're vetted. You're like, this is a big deal, and it's for life. We don't even know who the person is. I mean, popularity is just a fleeting thing. This thing that we are all striving to be recognized as an important person is really futile in the end. I am keenly aware that the message that I'm going to give you today is going to really only impact maybe between both services 10 people. The rest of you, totally and completely wasted your time today. And I am dead serious. Might as well have not. I mean, you may glean some little fact or tidbit that in the big picture is going to make no difference. But the what I want to share with you today and the impact or whether it's going to make a difference in you, I realize this morning is such a small cross-section of our group today. And the majority of you will walk out the same way you walked in, thinking that you matter. Because you don't matter. And when I tell you don't matter, you think I'm joking that there's going to be a catch here. There's no catch. And so when you hear that, maybe you're offended. Because you want to matter. And as much as you want to matter, doesn't make you matter. And so you resist that. But this isn't me saying you don't matter. This is a spiritual truth. That you don't matter. And it does fly in the face of what Mom always said. My mom always said I mattered and I was special. And the truth is that I will not be able to convince the majority of you today that you don't matter. You will walk out of here thinking you do. Because you want to matter. We spend our lives trying to matter. We spend tremendous amounts of energy trying to matter. I mean, look at our jobs. In our jobs, we're trying to matter. We're trying to make a difference. We're trying to move up the ladder, whatever that is. We're trying to have more influence. We're trying to matter. People need to notice us and see us. Some of us, we think we matter because of our parenting. That in our parenting, somehow we matter because we raised a good kid or whatever it might be. In our old age, our kids will, you know, sing our praises or something. I will have mattered. Anyone know your great-great-great-great-grandparents? Because they don't matter. And you won't matter either. You can't find your value there. You can't find it in the organizations that you're a part of, the clubs that you lead, PTA that you're a part of, some board of directors, some high up, who knows what. None of us even know that you do it. It doesn't matter to us. Our life resumes are filled with evidence that we matter. And if we even think for a moment that we don't matter, if the thought pops into our head that maybe my life isn't significant, we make an appointment with a shrink in hoping that he can reconvince ourselves that we are the narcissistic center of our universe. So today is going to kind of suck. If I was honest with you today, which I'll do my best to do, today is a test. That's the only purpose of today. It's a test. It's a test of your own spirituality, your spiritual maturity. Today, I'm going to call you to a way of Christ following that is counterculture. A realization that life is about others and life is not about you. And your response to this idea will reveal to you, not to me, but it'll reveal to you where you are in your spiritual journey of maturity. Now, I'm talking about this because I think the time is up. I've been here 17 years, and I've been through a lot of ups and downs in my own spiritual journey, but I think every once in a while, a church has to kind of call the question and say, how are we doing? And as a pastor, I have to call the question and say, how are we doing? How am I doing in my ministry, and how are we doing as a church? And are the things that we talk about here every Sunday making an impact and a change and transformation in our lives? Or is it really just feel-good, positive talk that we feel good about but doesn't really transform our lives? So I would say definitely the time is up because life is short. And too many people go to the end of their life and they lie in a coffin, usually right between these two air vents, the ones that I've dealt with. And as they lie there in the coffin, everybody that's here does their best to say important things about the person and try and convince themselves and others that the person in the coffin mattered. And honestly, when you listen to the talk, it's to convince themselves that they matter. If they can somehow make this person matter, then maybe they'll matter. Or maybe all these people will show up at their place and make sure that they matter. And it's this sense and this weird feeling of trying to hold and grab onto something that's fleeting. The person has passed away, but we want to make them important, but we're getting ready to bury them, and we all know that over time, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, not just the body, but everything that we knew of the person. And we wonder, will it matter? And the whole time we're trying to make ourselves matter, we get the question wrong. And we spend our lives pursuing emptiness, And honestly, wasting our time on that pursuit of trying to matter and be important. And I don't know what thing it is that will wake up our culture, Christianity here in America, or Hillcrest Church. The reality that the idea of being self-focused and having this self-focus in life is an empty pursuit. And that the life of the kingdom is the only life worth pursuing. And it's the only one that's going to matter in the end. Jesus was completely obsessed with this message. And he said right off the bat in Mark chapter 1, verse 15. This is the beginning of Mark. This is the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He said this: time's up. The kingdom's here. Change your life. Believe the message. You hear what Jesus is saying? Look, it's time to like stop believing whatever it is. And you have an idea and a way that this is all going to end up. He says, time's up. It's time to get on board. It's time to believe the message that I have and to start moving in that direction. We can't just stay in this lethargic state any longer. Jesus is saying it's the kingdom that matters. And our lives are created to usher in the kingdom. That's why we're here. Now, most Sundays, preachers all across America are standing up this morning and they've done the best they can to present some idea. I do it most every Sunday. Some of us teach a deductive style, or some of us teach a, you know, problem solution style, or more expository preaching. And, you know, some of you say, you know, maybe you've been to some church, you're like, I don't like the way that preacher preaches. I prefer how this preacher preaches. Every guy or gal is standing up trying to communicate something. And this is generally how it goes. We raise an issue, a question, an idea. Then we point to the scriptures for the teaching on that idea and try our best to convince you on what the scriptures have to say. And then once you're convicted, hopefully, then we end with some kind of illustration or fluffy story or application so that you can internalize it and do something with it. And the truth is that across America today, to the best efforts of the teachers this morning, everyone's going to leave the same way they came in, unchanged. And today, I am not going to give you the fluffy, comfortable, warm and fuzzy ending. I think I would do a disservice if I tried to lessen the blow this morning and make what I want to say this morning palatable. I am not going to try and convince you today as I do many Sundays from this very spot. Today I just want to tell you one thing. You don't matter. And I just want you to deal with it. I want you to be scandalized by that statement. I want you to be shocked by it. I want you to be mad about it. I want you to be formulating your mean-spirited email to me right now. And I also want you to be honest with yourself. And I want you to face the resistance that you have to that statement. And not only do I want you to face your resistance, but I want you to face your egocentricity. And I want you to let a greater truth totally unsettle you. You don't matter. I want to lead you to a place of transformation because I believe that this statement alone of anything I could say about Christianity, faith, the biggest statement I could say to you today, and if I could get you to the place of transformation as a result of the statement, it's that you don't matter. And I would like to bring you to the place of transformation. And every Sunday, as I try to bring you to a place of transformation, I then bring you back, and today I'm going to leave you. I'm going to leave you at the place I send and take you to, and I'm not going to bring you back. So when you leave today, you should feel crappy. And you should feel like we shouldn't have done this today, and Doug sucked today, and I didn't like that. Then I will feel like I accomplished something today. I want you to stay in that place of discomfort, and I want you to wrestle there. And I want you to come up with a couple different conclusions or thoughts as a result. I want you to know that this idea that you are not that important, that you are somehow the issue. It is you. It's not external. You are the issue with this. The resistance that you have with this is you. Also, I want you to come to the understanding that the answer to the wrestling you have is within you. Yeah, you have the issue, but the answer is within you. And ultimately, you're going to need help from a higher power, which I believe to be God, to help you get through this place that I would like to send you today. I want to take you somewhere today, and I just want to drop you off and let you find your own way back. You may this morning, and I believe most of you will, resist the idea that you are not that important. And though many of you resist it this morning, you are going to come to this determination in your life one way or another, whether you hear it and believe it today, or whether you just let life teach it to you. Talk to someone who's older. It becomes very apparent the older you get how little you matter in life, how little all the pursuits that you did, where they got you, what you achieved, and when it's just you and your God at the end, none of that other stuff mattered. So you can start to wrestle with this today. Start to build a life on that truth. Or life and its hard lessons will dismantle your current belief of your value, brick by brick, year by year, and decade by decade. Like, a lot of people go to church. And churches are filled today. That's great. But most people coming to church don't listen to spiritual truth anymore or spiritual teaching. Most people come to church and they're looking for a small dose here and there. And though people hear, they don't hear in the way that hearing affects or changes the way you behave. Most of us are looking for just enough church, just enough Jesus, just enough spirituality to get what we want. And what do we want? As Christians, what do we want? What's the end game?
Glory.
What?
Glory.
Yeah. Isn't that it's heaven, right? We all want to sit on a cloud playing a harp for eternity. Or whatever your idea of heaven. In fact, some of us believe like so much about heaven, we have no clue what it is, and we wonder if it really is the harp thing. That's gonna suck for eternity. But I know the opposite is hell, which I hear is burning in a lake of fire. So I'm going to play a harp like all eternity. Some of us, it's only because of the alternative. Even heaven isn't attractive to us. We just don't want to burn in hell. And when it comes down to it, we come to church and we learn about God so that we get just enough Jesus to keep from going to hell. And people come to me all the time with their issues and their problems in life. And when they sit across the table, 9 times out of 10, I hear, Pastor, what's enough Jesus? I want to do just enough spirituality to save my soul, but I really want to live my life the way I want to live it. I want to do my own life. I want to do my own thing. I don't want to like go all in for Jesus. There's got to be like a portion, like 3% for Jesus. Okay. 8% for Jesus. 92 minutes. Most of us come to church on Sunday, whether we want to admit it or not, looking for just enough Jesus. Going all in is ridiculous. And so people don't listen to or even trust spiritual teaching much anymore. When spiritual truths are taught, people don't really hear those truths. I mean, they hear the words, but they don't hear the words in the way that hearing impacts belief. Like when a child no longer listens to their parents. I now experience that in my life. I still have truths and important information that I want to pass on. And some of my children do not hear me anymore because they think I've said all I need to say. They know enough. And now they hear me like Peanuts characters hear their teacher. Wah, 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 wah. And when we hear spiritual truths that conflict with the way that we live our lives, that's how we hear it. I mean, we hear the words. We can regurgitate it back. We even walk out and say, that was a great message. Pastor Doug, that was very convicting. That was great. And most of the time, we think of who else should have heard it. Not ourselves, but we think of, you know, I hope my spouse heard that. I hope my kids heard that. I hope my brother heard that. I'm going to send this to someone. When's it online? Our defenses come up when we hear a spiritual truth that conflicts with the social norms or with cultural pressure. We immediately turn off the input. And then we start our work of justification and rationalizing and excusing our choices, behaviors, and beliefs. And we keep that spiritual truth at bay. We just need enough Jesus, not all this. Pastor Doug, it's too heavy, it's too much. Give me just enough Jesus that I'll leave here feeling like I'm good to go. Maybe some of you this morning are in denial with this. You're thinking, oh, I'm not the just enough Jesus guy or gal. How about sex before marriage? Everybody's having sex. Oh, come on, Pastor Doug. It's a new millennium. Get on board. God doesn't want it. Well, okay, I get it. God doesn't want it. I want just enough Jesus. I want just enough Jesus that I still go to heaven and I still want to have sex. Where's the line? Well, Pastor Doug, that's not me. Okay. Tithe 10%. God's happy with my 1%, 2%, which is the national average, 2%. Well, maybe he is. I don't know where you get that from. Well, Pastor Doug, the New Testament doesn't really say 10%. Yeah, the Old Testament actually says 30%. And if this isn't about tithing. Keep your money. I mean, you'll never hear that at Hillcrest. We will never say, guilt you into giving. Just keep your money. Hillcrest doesn't need it. We're doing just fine. But tithing is a spiritual discipline. And we give out of what God has given us, we give 10%. And if you give less than 10%, you are justifying, rationalizing that somehow. I don't know how. But whatever that percentage is, just enough. I won't worry about this. Give me that 2%. That's enough to get into heaven. Sharing our faith. You know, the Bible says, you know, share our faith. We don't do that. It's private, confrontational, it's messy. I might not be liked. I might be made fun of. I might be misunderstood. Someone else will do it. Pastor Doug, you should do it. Jesus knew that he needed to really destabilize a person's false self before they could understand that they had a true self, something different. But whenever you destabilize someone's security system and ultimately their ego, that's a tough sell. People don't like to be dismantled in that way. Jesus said this in Luke chapter 9, verse 25. He said, "And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but are yourself lost and destroyed?" Hey, what have you become the president? What have you become super popular and famous? You know, what if you become Paris Hilton, who's famous for nothing? What if you get, you know, like 10 million Twitter followers and everyone tweeting at you? Well, you've really arrived. What's the point if you gain the whole world and in the process lose your soul? Because this thing, I don't know how many years you get, I don't know. I have an app on my phone that tells me when I'm going to die. It's crazy. I love handing it to people and say, check out when you're going to die. It also tells you what you're going to die from. Stupid. I don't know how many years you have. I don't know how many years I have. But all that I've amassed here won't matter. Because I'm going to close my eyes to this world. I'm going to open it in something different. And everything I pursued here for fame and fortune is going to, well, not serve me too well there. Jesus loved this tension. He created it all the time in his teaching. He said this in Matthew 6:24. He says, "No one can serve two masters, for you're going to hate one and then love the other. Or you will be devoted to one and you're going to despise the other." And then he just brings it home. You can't serve both God and money. And most of us say, try me. I can. You can't. You can't pursue material things and pursue God. It just won't work. you know, and we're all guilty of it. I mean, let's just be honest. We're all living in houses way bigger than we need. I've been to South Sudan. I see what you need for housing. 12 people living in a bucket. And if you have a goat, you're the rich guy on the block. We all do it. And I know, like, God wants us to enjoy what we have. I get all that. But when we love that and we pursue that and we search after that and we go and go and go to get and get and get, and we can't give our 10%, right? Because, yeah, how am I going to get the next thing? God, you got to give me some more so I can give you your 10%. It's ridiculous. You were created as an eternal being with an unearned importance. And that importance is greater than any human achievement can bestow on you. Hear this today. If you hear nothing else from me, hear this. God created you for greatness. He created you for greatness. God has something in his kingdom for only you to do. And it is something of unprecedented greatness. Now, you'll resist that as much as I tell you that you don't matter. Isn't that a weird dichotomy? I tell you you don't matter, you resist it. I tell you you are created for greatness, and you resist that too. When God created you, when he dreamed you up, and he thought of, like, you know, how far apart your eyes would be and what your nose would look like and what color hair you had and how long you'll be able to have that hair, and picked everything about you. He then also picked your personality. And in the personality, he picked skill sets that you would have and passions that you would have and dreams and desires, and he packaged it all into you. And you are unique. You are like a fingerprint of all humanity. And he packaged it perfectly in you. And then he looked at all of history. And he looked for a time slot to drop you into, because he has something of incredible greatness for only you. And he found the spot for you to do this amazing thing he created for you. And he landed you in that spot. And he even looked over all of the humans that he created. And he picked a family for you. And maybe he gave you a brother and everything he's given you. And then in your life, he has given you experiences, many of those difficult and challenging that have shaped you to who you are. And all of it is pointing in one direction to this incredible greatness that he has for you. And we water it down and we numb it with our pursuit of greatness in this world and forget of the greatness that God has for us in his kingdom work. And we sell ourselves short. You are not important at all. And yet you are more important than you ever imagined. In Anton Chekhov's play, The Cherry Orchard, it's a Russian play. I know, I read some weird things sometimes. But there's this madam. She's kind of like, all the characters kind of centralize around her. She gives out the wisdom. And there's this student, his name's Peter, and he's a dope. And he thinks he's got everything all figured out. And so he's having this dialogue with her, and she finally pauses the dialogue, and this is what she says to Peter. She says, "You boldly settle all the important questions, but tell me, my dear boy, isn't it because you're young and the questions of the world haven't hurt you yet?" You get it? Yeah, he's got it all figured out because he hasn't lived any life. And in our arrogance, we've got this life all figured out. And I think many times God looks at us and says, "You've got it all figured out, and you have yet to live the kingdom greatness that I have for you. You don't even know what it is. You're not even pursuing it. You're pursuing futility. It will do you no good in the long run." I've been reading a lot from a guy named Richard Rohr. Anyone know Richard Rohr? Read any of his stuff? He's a Catholic priest. Catholics are good people. Richard Rohr, amazing spiritual guy. In fact, probably about 30 or 40% of what he writes is completely over my head. I don't get it at all. He's got levels and depths of spirituality that I could only hope to attain to someday. But every once in a while, he says something on a really dumb level, and I get it. And I've been reading this book of his called Adam's Return. And Richard Rohr said something in one of the chapters that was very profound, and I just wanted to read it for you. It's a couple paragraphs long, so just settle in. This isn't super dumbed down. It's a little tough for me, but you guys are better, smarter than I am. So just listen to what Richard has to say here. He starts with just some facts. He says, a gathering of American teachers told me recently that in their high school classes, students are not all that interested in writing papers or doing research on objective information. Rather, they just want to give their feelings and opinions on data information. They love to say what they like and what they don't like about things, as if everybody should care. And this is students age 16 to 18. We are inflating the youthful ego in ways that will not serve them well during the rest of their lives, in relationships, in marriages, in future job performance, and surely not in the search for God. Western and comfortable people everywhere have a strong sense of deserved entitlement. And we are creating unresolved troubles for young people by enabling such a sense of entitlement, usually in the form of cheap but effusive affirmation. I am special buttons and we are number one banners pinned on young people who have done little or nothing for themselves or society, and it only trivializes the human project. It dumbs the whole thing down to an embarrassing and finally unworthy image of their real dignity and possibility. From people from whom so little is expected, little can and will be expected for the rest of their lives. A master, when he says master, he means a spiritual teacher. When a master intentionally leaves a student in the belly of the whale, on the horns of our dilemmas, struggling with parables or problems and riddles, the ego must be frustrated until the student's self-serving and learning logic begins to crumble and he or she begins to call upon the deeper resources of a larger mind and heart. The two recognitions often happen at the same time. When I am not king, then the kingdom has its best chance of breaking through. But when I am king, it's a closed system. We must help people get out of their own way, and we can't do that without help. In fact, powerlessness is the beginning of wisdom, as the 12 steppers say. Final paragraph. All we can finally do is pray that we allow the flow of desire, which is the very presence of the Spirit within us. If there is no living water flowing through you, then you must pray for the desire to desire. As a priest, my constant disappointment is the lack of spiritual desire and even spiritual curiosity in most people. I meet a lot of fearful people in church, and a lot of opinionated people, and a lot of don't bother me people, and a lot of people seeking roles and importance through church ministry, but I honestly meet very few who seek God. In my experience, we are largely a gathering of those who seek security in religion. The goal must be to create a desire and a high-risk journey to satisfy that desire. And once the desire for something more is stirred and recognized, it's just a matter of time. Nothing less will ever totally satisfy you again. It's my hope to have you stirred and recognize that desire. So I leave you with this question today. Do you desire something more than your life has amounted to this far? That's a tough question. And honestly, if you don't desire something more than the pursuits of the world that maybe you have been doing, then my teaching for you has been a colossal waste of your time. And you and I, brothers and sisters, are on colossal opposite ends of this issue. And I say, if there is no living water in you, pray for the desire for desire. That's your only hope. But for the few of you today that can maybe break through all the barriers and be honest with yourself, to say that maybe it is that you do desire something more, I've got to ask you this question. If you desire something more, what are you going to do about it? And your answer can't be, find just enough Jesus. You've done that. It's not working. I may have taken you to the well today. But it's up to you whether you drink the living water or just continue being thirsty.
Christ is risen from the dead, trampling over death by death. Come awake, come awake, come and rise up from the grave. Christ is risen from the dead, we are one with him again. Come awake, come awake, come and rise up from the grave.
Sometimes God helps us maybe see things a little clearer at moments in our life when we allow Him to. I didn't say this in first service because honestly I didn't even think about it till just sitting there in the chair. But this Tuesday I went to see one of my mentors. Favorite guy I like to hang out with is in his 80s. Incredibly spiritually wise. And I planned this really special event. I invited him to it. It was to honor this other person. And it was quite a while ago. And this Tuesday, in our talk, he said, I want to say something that's going to be hard for you to hear. I can handle it. And he said, you made that event all about you. Didn't honor the person at all. It was just like a Doug fest. And I got mad. I even toyed when I left, never going back to see him again. Because he made me mad. And sitting there just now, I realized It's not about me. I try to make myself important all the time. It's about others. These kinds of messages aren't church growth messages. They're really bad for bringing people in. Like if you're visiting, you're like, man, this let's try somewhere else. But I do believe that these kind of messages are apathy-decreasing messages. And that's what I'm more interested in. I'm not interested in butts in the seat. I'm interested in hearts and love with God. And so I just want you to know I'm on a journey with you. It's not like, you know, this is for you. It's for me too. And God convicts me right here, second service, about my own issues. I got to deal with it. But we're missing you. You know, you can't just come on Sunday. That's dumb. It's not about just hearing, but doing. I need you in my small group, or someone else needs you. And I know, like, you're like, I don't like small groups. It's not about you. It's about the others that your life will rub off on, and serving around here, and getting involved, and figuring out what that thing is that God has for you. What is the greatness? Because it's there. Why did he create you? If you don't know, search with all your heart. God says, seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open for you. But you got to seek and you'll find. I hope you feel kind of crappy today. Thanks for coming. You're dismissed.